The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio, or its employees, or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Churchill said, "Those who fail to learn from history are condemned to repeat it." Kevin Hallinan believes that certainly applies to business. Welcome to Winning Business Radio here at W4CY Radio. That's W4CY.com. And now, your host, Kevin Hallinan.
Thanks for coming back to Winning Business Radio, everybody. The mission of this show, if you're a regular listener, you know it's to offer insights and advice to help people avoid the mistakes of others, to learn best practices, you know, the how-tos, the what-tos, sometimes the what-not-tos, to be challenged and certainly to be inspired by the successes of others. Interesting, every successful person I've ever had a chance to talk to has had some kind of failure in their lives and careers. So it's all about learning lessons, right? So while we all have to get our knees skinned once in a while, I always say I'm driven to keep those scrapes from needing major surgery. Let's endeavor to learn from history so we don't repeat it. Today, my guest is Merit Khan. She's the founder of Merit Based Business, author of Myth Shift, Challenging the Truths That Sabotage Success, creator of the Merit Method Sales Mastery Program, and writer, producer, and star of the one-woman inspirational comedy show, Book of Merit. Here's Merit's bio. With more than 20 years of sales management, coaching, training, consulting, writing, and speaking experience, Merit Khan has worked with thousands of clients across multiple industries with one goal in mind, grow sales and influence. She's certified in emotional intelligence and earned the highest designation in the National Speakers Association, one held by less than 12% of professional speakers worldwide, the Certified Speaking Professional, CSP designation. Merit performs stand-up comedy to unwind, because as she says, that's not stressful at all. Prior to forming Merit-based sales and leadership, she was the senior VP of sales for a nationwide sales training organization and the youngest general sales manager for a startup radio station in the country's third largest market. In her various roles as a business owner, trainer, coach, consultant, and keynote speaker, she's worked with CEOs, business owners, entrepreneurs, sales management teams, and professionals across a wide variety of industries, including financial services, manufacturing, engineering, professional services, technology, and even pest control. A true adventurer, Merit pulls business and life lessons from her own experiences backpacking around the world, bungee jumping, skydiving, ice climbing, scuba diving, paragliding, and crashing. That's an Olympic sport, right? She's likely the only person on the planet who's broken a left foot in Israel and a right leg in Croatia, but somehow she's walked away from both with inspiring messages that enable people to create new possibilities in business and in life. She holds a communications degree from Michigan State, lives in Denver, Colorado, with her, as she says, typical 16-year-old son, unchanged by the pandemic, at least if you measure by the time spent playing video games. Merit, thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. So he plays a lot of video games.
Oh, my God. I might be a sales expert, but I cannot seem to sell my child away from the video game system.
I know that works. I'd like to talk about background just a little bit. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in White Plains, New York, just outside of Manhattan. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. I was born in Chicago. My parents, all of my family's from Chicago. My dad got, quote unquote, temporarily transferred to New York. And I don't think he left New York until after my son was born. Wow. So if that's the Chicago Tribune's idea of temporary.
What were some of your early interests?
Early interests. Yeah. Theater, I would say. Theater was a real big early interest of mine. I really enjoyed performing. I loved early on making people laugh and, just being with large audiences. I don't think I ever outgrew that. I would say that was definitely something I enjoyed and I think I probably got that from both of my parents. They were both performers and community theater and things like that.
That's so cool. Hey, we have two listener questions already. Not even 5 minutes into the show. That's awesome. So Jake's question is, how do you find the time for all this? Good question.
Good question, Jake. I don't know that I necessarily do that all at the same time. I do try to blend that stand-up comedy and bring that wherever to wherever I'm doing at the moment, because I feel like comedy has been something that has just made everything a lot easier, right? That's so cool. In difficult times and in difficult business interactions, everything's just better with a little bit of comedy sprinkled on top.
For sure. Another one, Heath says, what brought you to all of these adventures? And I forgot to mention, or I skipped the word, you travel on your own when you travel.
I did. Yeah. I had been in radio advertising sales for 3 years, which that was my first job out of college. And I think, you know, at 24 years old and 3 years in the grueling workforce, day in and day out, you know, it was such a departure from college, right? And I was burned out. I mean, I was burned out at 24. And so I looked around and I thought, okay, I got to do something drastic. I got to do something different. So I put everything in storage. I announced to my family I was going to backpack around the world for a full year on my own. And I took off. And that definitely shook things up a bit. I've never been the same since. But that was, you know, I think every once in a while, you just need to do one of those things that just is a complete departure from everything else.
That's pretty cool. And the fact that you did it after working for 3 years suggested, to me at least, that your parents didn't fund it.
Oh, no, not a single penny. they said, well, you know, we love that you just want to break from the norm and do your thing, but we're not paying for it. Not by a long shot. And I did well. I did well in radio advertising sales. I saved all my money. I planned the trip for about a year. And then when I had the money that I knew I would need, not just for the trip, but also to come back and, you know, be able to support myself before I had a job again, then I was ready to go.
That's very cool. Yeah. And here's a fun fact that people might like to hear about. You were a Gerber baby.
Yes, I had a very short-lived modeling career that I did. And now I've got a face for radio, Kevin.
So you remember vividly being shot as a baby, right? Probably not.
Sure, yeah, vivid memories, right. Well, I do remember my mom telling a story about how she would get calls from the Gerber folks and some other the modeling agency I was part of. And they would say, you know, does Merit have white patent leather shoes? And no matter whether I had them or not, my mother would say, absolutely. And so then she would go out, buy me white patent leather shoes to do this photo shoot, which she probably spent more on money on the shoes than I made in the modeling. But, you know, it was something to say, you know, my child is a model. I think she had she liked that.
And once you're a Gerber baby, you're always a Gerber baby. Nobody can take that away, right?
That's true. You can't take it away. Although I also can't prove it. So you're going to have to take my word for it.
Okay. I do. So how did you get into sales? Was it intentional? Was it accidental?
You know, I think it was a foregone conclusion, right? So my dad sold advertising. My mom sold real estate. My grandfather had a used car dealership. So he was that stereotype guy. And my grandma sold Avon products. So it was really never a question of what's Merit going to do with her life. It was more of a question of what's Merit going to sell during her life. I just grew up around it. So everything from, you know, being the Girl Scout, you know, who sold the most cookies to, I mean, just anything. I was just constantly selling. I started my first sales business at 7 years old. I had a greeting card business, Kevin. I went door to door because that's how people buy greeting cards from a young child with big dimples door to door. So I made my own greeting cards and sold them, and I've never looked back. It's just in my blood.
So little known fact, people buy seeds that way too. I was a Boy Scout. I sold seeds door to door.
Wow. See,
you
and
know,
my
tomato
son,
seeds, vegetable, plant, whatever, you know, flowers.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, now they're selling popcorn. The Boy Scouts sell the most expensive, but delicious popcorn. And my kid, of course, was the number one popcorn sales, because how can you have a sales trainer and speaker and author as a mother who's also running the Boy Scout troop to who's not making sure that our troop wins everything there is to win. I'm a little
no
bit
pressure.
Competitive.
No pressure. All right. Yeah. So you spent like 6+ years, if my math was right, in radio media, right? Radio/media, right?
Yes. Yes.
What were your key takeaways from that business?
You know, that's a tough business. They say if you can sell radio advertising, you can sell just about anything. The thing about it is, you know, it's perishable, right? So if the minute, once the minute goes by, if it's unsold, you can't sell that minute in the past.
Yeah.
You can only
yeah.
sell the ones in the future. So every day that of the month that goes by, you have less and less inventory. And I was known as the pit bull of new business development for the stations that I worked for, because my mindset was just that, you know, everybody needs radio. And radio is
not
such
a bad mindset, by the way.
No, it's fantastic because, you know, radio is very connected. It's localized and, you know, and you feel like you really have a relationship with the people that you're listening to on the radio. And so I learned very quickly the power of doing commercials that were recorded by the hosts of the show and things mm-hmm. like that. And there were lots of different strategies. And I just loved radio advertising. It was fun and it was energizing, but it's a difficult sell because you not only have to sell against other stations, but you're also up against every single way that a business could advertise their company, right?
So online now and whatever.
Yeah, and direct mail and cable was new back in the day. And there's so many things. And now, you know, there's lots of different choices with social media and podcasts and things, but it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Then you got into the sales training industry.
I did. Yes.
Well, tell us about, I mean, that's where I am, but tell us about that.
Well, I have always had the mindset that you dress and you train for your next job. Mm-hmm. So while I was a radio advertising salesperson, I was looking around at what's the career progression here. Mm-hmm. And the natural progression would be to be a sales manager at a radio station. So I thought, all right, well, that is clearly what I should want to do. And if I want to be a sales manager, I should probably put myself in a sales management training class so that
makes
I'm
sense.
Preparing for that role and I'm ready when that opportunity presents itself. Mm-hmm. And so I did. I took some sales training courses and a sales management training course. And then I got an opportunity to become a sales manager. This was after I came back from my trip around the world. Then
right.
I was recruited as a sales manager. And I thought, wow, that's crazy. I didn't think I was really ready for it, but because I had trained for it, you know, opportunities present. And it was in that role as a sales manager that I realized that the parts of my job that I really enjoyed had to do with inspiring people, coaching people, training them, helping them grow their book of business as opposed to the one-on-one direct sales that I was doing. But I also realized in that moment that I didn't really love the radio business as much as I thought. Mm-hmm. I really loved the coaching part. And so when our radio station was on the chopping block, we were being sold, my choices were throw my hat in the ring for another radio station job or see how I do with sales training and coaching.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I loved it, loved it, loved it, and have never looked back. That was 1998.
So we must have run into each other at some point. I don't remember meeting you. I'm pretty forgettable. So, but I'm sure we were in the same hotel.
I'm usually memorable, Kevin, so I don't know about that.
I'm sure we bumped into each other, but it's funny. I don't remember meeting you, but that was the Sandler Sales Training organization.
Yes.
And you were with Sandler for, about 10 years, right?
Yeah, something
pretty
like that.
Pretty good run, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
And then you branched into other forms of sales training, other models. What was behind your decision to make that change?
A couple things, really. As I was building my Sandler practice, I have been doing some executive briefings, we used to call them, or maybe
sure.
still call them that, like
we'll do, yeah.
free talks, right? I would go to business events, chamber of commerce, things of that like that. And I would be invited as a speaker to present some sales content. And at the end of those meetings, my goal was always to encourage people to want to talk to me about the opportunity of joining my sales training classes. And one day, somewhere toward the early part of my 10-year career with Sandler, I was offered some money to do the program I would have done for free. So I thought, well, that's interesting. How does that work? And I quickly learned that I could become a professional speaker. Mm-hmm. And I really started studying the speaking business. So it was really an interesting development. I hadn't really set out to do that, but I did love the speaking and presenting part of being a business owner and in the Sandler model. And, you know, we used to say that you have a training habit. You enjoy doing the training, right, but you have to sell, right, to get the
That's
people
right.
in the classes.
That's correct.
It's really a sales job, mm-hmm, that, and you get to do training once you've done the business.
I describe
selling.
It that way all the time to people.
Yeah.
Right.
So that was really, the decision to leave the Sandler mothership and do my own thing, mm-hmm, was a pretty natural one for me. I first of all, my family, we had decided to move to another state. So I knew I had to start over,
right,
in something. And I could have stayed with the model and done that in a new place. Mm-hmm. But I felt like I had wanted to bring some more elements to my sales training programs, to my clients. In fact, there was, I think, the pivotal moment when I think back, really what it was, I had these two guys in my training class, Steven and Daniel. I'll never forget them because they worked for the same company. They were hired at that company around the same time, and that company invested in them participating in the Sandler classes. So those guys would come week after week. They would sit next to each other in my class. They would learn the same content from the same trainer at the same time. They sold the same products and services at the same price point in the same territory. I mean, if I'm honest, these guys even looked alike, right? There
That's
was
fine.
Like nothing different about these two.
Yeah.
Except that Steven, you know, he would just come back week after week. He's like, Merritt, I used that upfront contract that you told me, and that worked great. You know, Merritt, I used these questioning techniques, and that was amazing. And then Daniel would learn the same exact things, but he didn't have the same success stories. And I was super frustrated because I thought, how can I take responsibility, or how could I take credit really for Steven's success if I wasn't also taking responsibility for Daniel's kind of, you know, status quo. And I started looking into, you know, what was the difference in these guys, because it wasn't really anything that was right in front of us.
Hold that thought right there. I just realized the time. We're going to take a break. We'll come back for the punchline of this story. I know it's
Perfect.
Going to be a good one in just a couple minutes. We'll be right back with Merritt Kahn.
You're listening to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan on W4CY Radio. That's W4CY.com. Don't go away. More helpful information is coming right up, right here on Winning Business Radio.
Have you ever dreamt of being on the radio? Well, now is your chance. Be a radio show guest on the number one ranked internet radio station and promote you and your business for free. Yes, you heard it, free. Business advertising right here on W4CY.com. Call 561-506-4031 now to get booked on one of our shows. That's 561-506-4031. Get your free advertising now.
You can tell what's wrong with a car just by sitting next to it at a red light. You can tear down a big block engine in 26 minutes. You know cars. We can help you find more of them to work on. And together, we can get your small business moving in the right direction. At AT&T Advertising Solutions, we have more ways to reach more people. With print, online, mobile, and direct marketing, AT&T Advertising Solutions has local advertising experts to help your small business find more customers. Call 1-800-GET-REAL to learn more. AT&T, rethink possible.
Be seen, be heard on the Internet's number one ranked radio station right here in West Palm Beach. What a way for your business to have a voice. Now is the time to advertise your business on W4CY.com. Call 561-506-4031 for a deal you won't refuse. Again, that's 561-506-4031. Don't wait. Call now.
This is Colt Ford, and you're listening to W4CY Radio.
And now back to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan, presenting exciting topics and expert guests with one goal in mind, to help you succeed in business. Here once again is Kevin Hallinan.
We're back with Merit Khan. She's the founder of Merit-Based Business, the author of Myth Shift, which we'll get into in a little bit, Challenging the Truths That Sabotage Success, creator of the Merit Method Sales Mastery Program, and writer, producer, and star of the one-woman inspirational comedy show, Book of Merit. We'll get to that before we're done, too. So you were talking about Stephen and Daniel. You were saying, how can you take credit for Stephen? But, right, continue right there.
Right. Yeah. Well, what I really looked at was what was the difference between these two guys, because they were learning the same skills and action plans and all of that. And that's when I really stumbled across at that time. This was, early 2000s, that this whole body of work around emotional intelligence. And I started to understand that there are some attributes that are really common to the top people in the sales profession, and things like self-regard and assertiveness and optimism. Those are incredibly important elements for a salesperson to layer good skills on top of. And what I noticed when I assessed both of them was that they were very different in things that were not easily recognized upfront, right? Yeah. So underneath the surface, they were very different in their personalities. It's different than behavioral style. They were different in their wiring, the fundamental ways of the way that they thought. And so once I understood that, I could teach Daniel in a way that would make more sense to him based on how he was wired. And I could teach them the same things, and then they could work better.
That's outstanding. We'll talk a bit about emotional intelligence in just a couple minutes here. But so you worked for various organizations. It looks like, I don't know, I didn't count, but a few different sales training organizations. Then you decided to found your own business. What was behind that decision?
Well, I think at that point I had been a creator of content, and to just go on, teach somebody else's content was very frustrating for me at that time, because the part that I really loved was really tuning in and listening to what my clients needed and then figuring it out for them. So as an example, I had many clients, in fact, when I was working with Sandler, that would ask me, well, I'm hiring new salespeople. How do I get them up and running? And I thought, well, you put them in my sales training class. that's how that works. And they said, yeah. But how do I teach them everything they need to know and everything they need to be able to do and all the systems and tools around our business that they need to use so that they can be up and running quickly? And I thought, well, that's interesting. I don't know the answer to that. So I went out and sure enough, there's this whole body of work called onboarding new hires. And I didn't understand it. And what they wanted from me was something beyond what they could get from their HR perspective, right? They didn't want the compliance onboarding. They wanted the people onboarding, right? So how do I onboard people into their actual job? And I began to develop systems and tools. At one point, I was even affiliated with a product that automates that whole system of designing and delivering that onboarding experience. But the whole point of having my own brand was to give really myself some freedom to continue my own development, to offer my clients what they needed when they needed it, mm-hmm. to partner with the right resources and other experts in the marketplace to really develop new things. And I found that to be incredibly exciting and fun and relevant for my clients.
So I'm going to ask you about the company, but first I have two more questions from listeners. Kyle said, how do different salespeople fit certain stereotypes versus others? You alluded to that a bit between Stephen and Daniel, but take that question as best you can.
You know, I think a lot of that speaks to the emotional intelligence aspect of it, really, because mm-hmm. that's where we're getting our stereotypes. And let's map that onto what we're dealing with today, right? So today, as we're recording this episode, we're in the early, the stages of this, right. COVID-19 crisis.
It's May 4th for those listening later.
Yeah, right. 2020. This the year will go down in history for sure.
The year that will probably be taken off the calendar at some point.
Oh, gosh. I'm looking forward to turning the page on this calendar. But anyway, sure. In fact, I was doing a virtual training program this morning for an organization, and we made the distinction between empathy and assertiveness as two very important aspects for salespeople. And I think to your question, Kyle, about the stereotypes, there's that stereotypical pushy, aggressive salesperson. Mm-hmm. And I can tell if I'm going to be dealing with somebody like that, because I know from looking at their emotional intelligence assessment that is somebody with very low empathy and high assertiveness, mm-hmm. right? So how that looks in the marketplace right now is those are the people who are pushing their agenda regardless of what's going on in the world. Like somebody who hasn't changed their messaging or their offers so that they're appropriate in today's world with everything that we're dealing with, mm-hmm. but they're just kind of, it's the same email you might've gotten from them 3 months ago, and they're just ramming it down your throat. That's a pushy, aggressive salesperson. Mm-hmm. We all know that stereotype. I can take somebody like that, show them what they look like on paper, describe to them exactly what's going to happen, because right now, somebody with that personality profile or emotional intelligence makeup is going to damage their brand in the long run. Like, I really believe, because I'm already seeing that happening for myself, the way that I look at those people delivering those messages on social media, are they sleeping under a rock? How do they not know what's going on? Like, that's completely ineffective right now. So that's that stereotype. But that's, if we go on the other side of the spectrum, very high empathy, low assertiveness, those people aren't even making sales calls right now. So if you're a manager and you're listening to this, I guarantee you have somebody on your team like that. And they're probably, I don't want to say this in a callous way, but they're probably using this global pandemic as an excuse to do what they didn't want to do and they weren't doing anyway, right? They weren't
making
calls.
But their motive, I think you're spot on, but their motive is, I just want to be nice. I don't want to bother anybody.
Exactly, right. I'm so high empathy. I'm putting myself in their world. I'm feeling their feels, but I don't want to be aggressive about it. So I'm not even going to assert my solutions. And that's, the stereotypical, salesperson on the other side of the thing that's, probably not going to make it through this challenging time. Yeah. So I'd have to know more specifically, Kyle, about the stereotypes, if there's another stereotype in there, but I hope we addressed at least a couple.
All right. Here's a question from Peggy. Do you feel speakers are salespeople?
Absolutely. I mean, speakers are my friends, right? They're my friends and my colleagues. Mm. I'm a longtime member of National Speakers Association. And that is, first and foremost, it's a sales job. Now, the first thing is you've got to have a good speech, right? You got to be good from the platform. And theoretically, when you're good, it speaks for itself and you get additional business. And I think we could say that about any business, right? If you're good at what you do and you're an expert, referrals happen, introductions happen, and things like that. But you can't rely on that, right? That's not a sustainable strategy for business. You have to be able to go out and close deals from those introductions that are made for you if that's the main strategy for getting the business. So yeah, speaking business, absolutely. Absolutely. I think I would say that most of my career, I've worked with professionals who are very, very good at what they do and so frustrated because the reason they have their own business is that they're so good at what they do, but they never realized how much selling is involved. And you got to be as good at the sales part if you want to be in business for very long.
You got it. If you want to flourish.
Exactly.
All right. Tell us about your own firm, The Merit Method, Sales Mastery for Life.
Well, first of all, for anybody going, wow, she sure loves her name. I get it. I hear you. I didn't always love my name. I was sick at about 11 years old. I was pretty sick of being teased about my name. So I changed it to Stacy, which was my middle name. But merit means worthy of praise, worthy to earn. And so if you think about it, what I teach is for salespeople, not just to be better at the sales process for their own sake, but to be truly worthy to earn the business that they're going after. And that's why I call it the merit method. It's really about being worthy.
And believing that, feeling that, right?
Absolutely. That's, you know, really 90% of it, if not more, is mindset. Mindset is really everything. I would say, you know, I teach people how to handle objections and qualify or disqualify or, you know, sales messaging and making appropriate offers. But, you know, how I do that is very, very different. Because a lot of coaches and trainers, they'll teach scripts and you know,
right,
action plans.
Right.
They focus on technique and behavior. And really most of my work is focused on mindset first, because then when you layer on behavior and action plans, everything works better.
Yeah. I saw a descriptor, it must've been on your website, might've been LinkedIn, I forget, but it said The Merit Method, not sales technique training.
Yeah. I mean, there is some technique. I tend to teach in formulas. So, you know, a lot of organizations and you know, will teach like, say this script, or, you know, a lot of onboarding, when I was doing a lot of that work, companies would have their onboarding scripts that new salespeople would have to learn.
Right.
And I think that's really constricting, and it doesn't, you know, if you lose your way in the script, if something doesn't happen according to the way you've role played and practiced it, then you're completely off track. But I teach in formulas. So, you know, get these elements of the formula in. Here's why you need all these elements. But how you say it is, you know, completely up to you. You have some freedom there. And that gives people a lot more confidence that they've got the right elements and freedom to mix and match a little bit.
Yeah, they can be themselves, right?
Yeah.
Another minute or so before the next break. Who are your clients and why do they engage you?
Well, that's a great question. They're kind of all over the map.
Yep.
And I would say, you know, if you had asked me that question a few months ago, a big stream of my revenue and, you know, my business model was speaking. So my clients were large organizations, corporations inviting me in as the opening keynoter, association conferences, things like that. And now I'm really pivoting. I'm doing more, not pivoting, it's just a different delivery model.
Right.
I'm doing a lot of virtual training and a lot more coaching right now. And so my clients are sales teams and entrepreneurs in a wide variety of businesses. But honestly, they're people who can't afford to wait this thing out. They're not a wait and see type people.
Right.
They are willing to do the hard work to change their offers and their messaging so it's appropriate for today. And they're leaning in. They're working hard.
So we're going to take a second break right here. But it occurred to me as you were talking about that it, remember this, 2020 is when the word Zoom became a noun.
That is so true.
Just came up with that while you were talking. You can steal that if you want. Anybody listening can steal that if you want. So we'll be back in just a couple minutes with Merit Con.
You're listening to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan on W4CY Radio. That's W4CY.com. Don't go away. More helpful information is coming right up, right here on Winning Business Radio.
Hey, this is Kenny Wayne Shepherd, and you're listening to W4CY Radio.
Is your pet overweight? Suffer from itchy skin and coat problems? Showing signs of food allergies? Then do your pet a favor. Stop by Fiesta Pet Deli, South Florida's original and only fresh food deli for pets. Prepared daily and FDA approved with products like Bravo, Nature's Variety, and BioComplete. Listen, dogs and cats are carnivores. 90% of their diet should be meat. That dry kibble you put in their bowl every day contains less than half of what their bodies require. Veterinarian owned and operated, Fiesta Pet Deli has one mission: to get your pet as healthy as possible. Give them a call today at 954-971-2500 or come check out their new store at the Festival Flea Marketplace at Sample Road in the Turnpike in Pompano, Florida. They also offer free local delivery, shipping throughout the United States. Check out their website at www.realfoodforpets.com or just Google Fiesta Pet Deli. If you truly love your pet and care about their health, stop by Fiesta Pet Deli. Call today at 954-971-2500. Have you ever dreamed of having your own radio show? Well, W4CY Radio makes dreams come true. You can be a radio personality on the number one ranked internet radio station in West Palm Beach, Florida. We can be heard in 105 countries in all U.S. states. Promote your business. Earn up to $10,000 per month and more. It's all up to you. Have fun and be heard. Call 561-506-4031. That's 561-506-4031. Start your radio show now.
Hey, this is Johnny Three Tears from Hollywood Undead, and you're listening to W4CY Radio.
I do whatever it takes to make it break through. Anything I'm face to face with, it's true.
And now back to Winning Business Radio with Kevin Hallinan, presenting exciting topics and expert guests with one goal in mind: to help you succeed in business. Here once again is Kevin Hallinan.
We're back again with Merit Khan. I'm going to read the thumbnail again. The founder of Merit-Based Business, author of Myth Shift, Challenging the Truths That Sabotage Success, creator of the Merit Method, Sales Mastery Program, and writer, producer, and star of the one-woman inspirational comedy show, Book of Merit. Before we continue, I just want to, if people have sales training needs, particularly in Denver, but really anywhere, how can they reach you?
My website is meritbasedbusiness.com. It's M-E-R-I-T, meritbasedbusiness.com. And you can certainly find me on LinkedIn. Go ahead and, you know, send me a note and let's connect. And the other thing you can do is MeritKhan, M-E-R-I-T-K-A-H-N. If you do meritkhan.vip/EQ test, you can go right to a page where you can purchase an opportunity to do the emotional intelligence assessment and schedule a 1-hour one-on-one debrief with me. And that there's a special deal going on right now on my links. So when you use that special link, I'll know you're from this show or one of the other events that I've done, and you'll get the special deal.
Very good. So I want to go, I know you do keynotes and conferences. We talked about that. I want to get just a little bit deeper dive before we get into the book of emotional intelligence, what that training looks like, who it's for, what people learn, and kind of what how they change through it. Because I'm going to agree with you, first of all, that it's a critical skill for salespeople, for anybody, but in particular salespeople.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it used to be one of those things that was considered a quote unquote soft skill, but really there's so much research now. And when I started talking about and training emotional intelligence, it was kind of a new buzzword in the marketplace. And now people are pretty familiar with it, but maybe not so much the nuances of it. And, you know, you could go to Barnes & Noble and get a $5 off the shelf, a self-scoring assessment. But I think this is one of those things that it's actually more dangerous to do something like that than it is helpful, because there's the interesting thing about emotional intelligence, the way that I teach it, is the connections between those attributes. So the assessment that I use is actually the one in the global marketplace that has the most science and research. It's the most validated tool out there. It's a company called Multi Health Systems, MHS, out of Toronto. And they've done unbelievable amount of research to back up all of their findings. That's incredibly important because there's 15 attributes that we assess for. But where the stories are told, especially in sales, is the combinations between those attributes. So I mentioned empathy and assertiveness. I'll give you another one, optimism and reality testing. So for example, I am high optimist and generally low reality testing. Yeah. What does that mean? You know, what does that mean in COVID-19? It means, oh, I'm not going to get this thing. I'm going to go do whatever I want to do. Well, that's probably not a good strategy right now. High reality testing, low optimism. Those are your devil's advocates. Those people in the meeting that drive you crazy because they're always coming up with why this won't work because right. they just can't see any light at the end of the tunnel. So really, that's another example of a combination that you would want to see well balanced, particularly to be effective in sales. I've got to see something working out, and then I've got to be able to make sure that I'm in touch with reality and I'm standing in my power, asking the questions that need to be asked to make sure that I'm not listening to something with happy ears.
Oh, very good. Thanks for that. That answer was more for me than the audience, but I hope they would enjoy it too. So the book Myth Shift, Challenging the Truths That Sabotage Success. It's available on Amazon. By the way, I noticed it's under the assumptions that a maiden name.
It's under my former married name.
Or I went
back
former
to my,
name.
My okay. maiden name. My gotcha. Maiden name's gotcha. Khan, so we're going with that.
Okay. So take us through the book just quickly. I want to get to content, but just quickly, why did you write it and was it a tough undertaking? How long did it take?
Yeah, it was a tough undertaking. I like to say, well, I wrote 3 books and published one. You know, when you write a book, you write everything, and then you go through this process. At least this was my process. I wrote, and then I had the experience of, I'm not sure if this is anything good, so I leave it in my computer. I do nothing with it. Then I wrote a completely different book, did nothing with that one, and then I sent both books to an editor, and I said, I want you to just delete everything that you've heard before in any way, shape, or form, and only keep what's original and relevant and useful. And so then we ended up with however many words we did. And then we talked about what were the gaps in this formula. And then I wrote some new stuff. So that's kind of the process of it. But the reason I wrote that book was there were so many what I call absolutes in business. Like, you should do things this way. You shouldn't do it that way. You know, you should make decisions quickly. There's just so many things.
Well, I wrote down the 4 myths that I want you to talk about.
Oh, okay, great.
First is be more decisive, right?
Right, which I think there's some elements of truth to that, right? You want to be decisive, but there are also times, and today is a perfect example of that, where you need to re-decide an original decision. So I'll say what I mean by that.
Yeah.
For example, at the very beginning of this COVID experience, we did not have a lot of information. We didn't know how long this virus would last on different things. And we just didn't know. Now we're 2 months into, and so we made decisions based on fear and uncertainty and not knowing real information. Now we're 2 months or so into this, as in the US anyway, and we have a lot more information. It would be very useful for our leaders to be able to say, you know, we have redecided our plans based on the new information that we've received. At the time when we made these decisions, this was the right course of action based on the information we had at that time. And now with this new information, it makes sense to go in this direction. And of course, you know, we can have a whole conversation about about that. But when you're open to redeciding from a place of power and confidence based on new information, that's much different than just changing your mind at the drop of a hat. And I think it's a very powerful place. I have been having many conversations with people in sales like that right now, where, you know, it's inappropriate to offer some of the things that they have, that they are offering for sale in this environment. And you have to redecide things that are the right offer. You may have to redecide your pricing and payment methods and options. You may have to redecide, you know, I have to redecide how I work. Nobody's meeting in large events for a while. Right. So redeciding, I had to redecide how my office space looks so that I could deliver virtual training in a way that had a particular look to it that I would have delivered on a stage live. So there's a lot of new decisions that need to be made. And therefore, you know, making quick decisions is not always the best option, particularly in an environment like this.
Myth two, be more proactive.
Yes, myth two. So being proactive is great. You know, you always want to, the idea here was I was always told go the extra mile. Well, mm-hmm. going the extra mile is only worthwhile if you've delivered on your original promise. So if you haven't delivered on the original promise, then being proactive about doing something additional isn't going to get you anywhere. For example, in the radio business, we were always given tickets to this concert and tickets to that sporting event and all kinds of extra freebies, extra things. Yep. Well, if the radio schedule that they bought didn't run when they wanted it to run, if we screwed up the commercials, if any of those things happened, I promise you, the concert tickets didn't make up for that miss. So I say, first deliver on your original promise, then go the extra mile, then be proactive.
That's very good. Very good. Myth three, be more positive.
Be more positive, right? Ugh, happy, upbeat, you know, that speaks again to that relationship between optimism and reality check, right? You know, being all optimistic all the time is quite frankly annoying. No one needs that from you. Like, just stop it. So I think the idea is be just positive enough. So if you think of a spectrum, like if there's a scale of 1 to 5 and 1 is, you know, overly realistic to the point of devil's advocate and 5 is Pollyanna happy, then you'd think that the sweet spot is 2.5. It's not. The sweet spot is really 3.2. Leaning toward optimism.
Right.
And the reality is, you know, the thing is you want to be able to see something good, see a positive result, and then that gets you in action to move toward it as opposed to dead set balance between optimism and reality. So I say, be just positive enough.
I like it. I like it. Myth four, be more present.
Be more present. Yes. Sometimes, like today, being in the present moment is really hard. And if you are seeing things in the present that are dark and, you know, cause you fear or pain, it may be better to put yourself in a mindset where you're looking at today based on a future perspective. So why I'm able to get myself and my clients through a challenging time is because I'm not just saying like Pollyanna, oh, we'll get through this. We'll get through this together. I literally do see a positive outcome at some point in the future. And I'm allowing that future to pull me from where I am today in the present, as opposed to just that vantage point at the downward part of the curve.
Yeah, I believe there are going to be a lot of strategic byproducts, right?
Absolutely.
Probably more virtual business, probably better, hopefully better, health habits.
Absolutely.
I think there are going to be a whole bunch of things, right?
There's going
priority
to be
shifts.
Sure. I mean, how many times have you waited to get, you know, a medical thing? Like now we're going to have telemedicine on different levels. Our technology is going to be improved.
Hopefully,
I think there's going to be a lot better. I think the flu, regular incidences of the other flus and other kinds of illnesses may be minimized because of the precautions that are now going to be routine in our airlines and different things. So I think there's going to be a lot of positive that will come from this, but it's just going to take, we've got some growing pains before we're there.
I agree. Now, here's a question we don't need to respond to. I just get a kick out of it. Who's this, Wes said, who's this Pollyanna chick that keeps getting a bad rap? I just like the question.
Yeah.
So take us out by telling us two things. What do you want readers to get out of the book, big picture, and then tell us how they can get it?
The book's available on Amazon, just Myth Shift by Merritt, and you should be able to find it that way. You know, I think the book is essentially about opening your mindset. You know, when I work with people, whether it's, you know, on a big stage with a large audience or one-on-one in a coaching conversation, really what I'm doing is teaching them what I call the open for business mindset. It's really about being open to new possibilities, being open for more. And that is the main message of the book, is just be open to some new ways of thinking about these truths that have been, you know, just shoved upon you in business as the gospel. And I'm just saying, look at that and just say, you know, is this the truth, or is there a shift to this myth that would open up other opportunities for me?
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. I'm sure the listeners did too. This is a good outlet and a good forum, and I hope you get a couple books sold, and hope people can reach out to you.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure to be here, and you know, I just, one last little thing. I would just say that the sales mindset mastery work that I do is really a good complement for any sales technique training that somebody's currently doing. So I don't like to undo any good training that people have had.
That's
it's
good.
Just a nice compliment.
Thank you. Thanks for saying that. And thank you, everybody, for listening. This is a show about business and business challenges. If you've got concerns about the growth of your company, you can reach out to me at kevin@winningbusinessradio.com. Our company, we're Winning Incorporated. We develop sales teams into high achievers and sales leaders into true coaches and mentors. We're not a fit for everybody, but maybe we should have a talk. Thank you again to my favorite engineer, Rebel Medler. Hope you feel better soon. Tune in again next Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern. My guest will be Tanya Osensky, who is an author, and you're going to enjoy that conversation too. Thanks, everybody.
You've been listening to Winning Business Radio with your host, Kevin Hallinan. If you missed any part of this episode, the podcast is available on Talk 4 Podcasting and iHeartRadio. For more information and questions, go to winningbusinessradio.com or check us out on social media. Tune in again next week and every Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time to listen live to Winning Business Radio on W4CY Radio, W4CY.com. Until then, let's succeed where others have failed and win in business with Kevin Hallinan and Winning Business Radio.